Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, the podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Sweet. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is It's Movie Time. And thank you for the tip on The Housemaid. You knew I'd like the leading ladies.
Oh, wonderful cast in this movie. I mean,
Amanda Seyfried and Sydney Sweeney. And this is a double barrel casting of
it
these
is,
two.
It is a powerful casting.
Do you think there's any similarity to Thelma and Louise?
I don't see that so much as, we'll go back a step.
Yeah.
You and I have been at odds about these movies that are based on best-selling books.
Ah.
It Ends With Us, Regretting You, On Wild Horses, and I can go on and on. You found them to be shallow, a little... Would you agree that you cannot make a book a New York Times bestseller based only on marketing?
Yes, I think
there,
so.
There has
these
to be
are
substance
way too
to
smart,
it.
Right? So, they're not dumb.
It doesn't matter whose name is on the cover. It doesn't matter who's recommending it. If the book is not good, it's not going to turn into a New York Times bestseller. If nothing else, they're going to have a very tight, strong script. They're going to be based on a book that had to have something going for it to be turned into a film, regardless of who gets cast. And in putting together a New York Times bestseller into a movie, you want to have a good, strong, recognizable cast.
Well, and Freda McFadden, who wrote the novel.
Yes.
I mean, it's bringing in some real powerful stuff.
There's two novels and one short story.
Right, okay. And it's a boilerplate setup. You see these two female leads, and one is living in Die For House in Long Island.
Yeah.
And the other is a young woman who is just trying to avoid being sent back to prison.
Yeah, just out of prison and living in her car, right. Living rough.
Right.
Now, you polar opposites, they have to face off. Now, what made this a particularly difficult book to film was that it has an unreliable narrator in the young girl who is becoming the housemaid. The book tells it her point of view, and she is not always accurate in how she remembers things. And that becomes very difficult because a movie is very difficult to film in an unreliable way. What you see on screen is taken as factual, unless you see completely different views depicted on screen. You take what you see usually as the truth.
But you're a sophisticated viewer, and you know this from the get-go. And you and I are very similar in this. Whatever the director wants us to do, we'll go there. Even if it's an unreliable narrator, it's just part of the whole crazy mix of what's going to happen when she drives up putting on her glasses to put on her front as she's coming to take this job.
That she's a college grad student, short on money, and trying to get this job.
It has reasonable twists to it.
It does.
There are things we don't know, and when we do know them, they fit.
We are rewarded in this because, just like in any good New York Times bestseller thriller, we are not going to see the twists coming. It's not that predictable. So as you watch this movie, there are little rewards that you get that, I didn't see that coming. It's very satisfying. I'm always happy when I'm seeing a film and somebody catches me by surprise because I try to overthink. I try to think, if I were writing this, what would I do? And a lot of times I can guess ahead and what should be a twisty, weavy movie becomes very predictable for me. Not so much this one. I really did feel very satisfied watching this film.
There's word that Amanda may get a nomination for another movie that she's in.
We have Amanda coming out again next week in a very powerful musical called The Testament of Anne Lee, based on the story of the woman who founded the Shaker movement back in the 18th century. It's a film that has been getting a lot of attention at film festivals, very heavy R rating because they've decided to be relatively explicit with several birth sequences. And this was Seyfried's desire to do this, to show everything very graphically, not to hold back.
Big surprise because they died out since they're not allowed to have sex.
There are still three or four Shakers still left in the
world.
In
New England somewhere.
They're in New England. There's a couple that are in the Shaker, over 100.
The Shaker Village is down near Louisville. It's just a fantastic preserved Shaker Village.
Shaker Village.
You go into their big meeting area.
Yeah.
They have one staircase one way and one the other way, men, women.
Men and women, yeah. And little portholes where the men and women could look out and make sure nobody was touching and nobody was flirting with one another.
But you're true. It's not
If you're a Shaker, you cannot have children.
Well, if you joined them, if you weren't born a Shaker.
Oh, if you weren't, you can come into the Shaker with children, but then your marriage is annulled. Your children were no longer yours. No, they were successful for many years.
Well, anyway,
but anyway, getting back to our movie, The Housemaid. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there, a lot of women especially, who read this book or got this book in a Book of the Month club or in book group, are expecting this movie. And I'm going to say it's going to live up to your expectation.
It's the first time in a long time that Lennox was almost packed.
Yes.
These are people who had read the book and or heard, so there's a good buzz on it.
Now, was your audience also primarily women?
No, actually couples. Very interesting.
Oh, really?
Interesting question. Yeah, both couples. The male role here, played by S-K-L-E-N-A-R, who has done a lot of TV work.
Okay.
That's why we haven't seen him.
Okay.
But he's like Hugh Jackman ramped up.
My God. Well, he's got the million-dollar smile that the role required.
And I don't know how much time during the day he pumps up, but he is. So he's an imposing presence. Why I opened up with a question about Thelma and Louise is that there's a role to be played by our male here that is almost the equivalent of the roles played by these two ladies.
Yeah.
But it's a slow burn. It's, you know, we begin to see more and more of him as it comes along. And I like it because I think you even suggested it. There's something about the male presence in this one that's terribly important and modern.
Well, the movie is really about how men treat women.
Yes.
You know, you don't expect that. For the first half hour, 45 minutes of this movie, you think it's going to be about a crazy, rich housewife and a woman on probation desperately searching for a job, but we don't want to give away the twist. But ultimately, this movie is much more similar, I think, to the movie Where the Crawdads Sing. And although Crawdad was really about a woman and a man, and this one was about two women and a man, it reinforces the same themes that we saw in Crawdad. So if folks out there who saw Where the Crawdads Sing like that movie, you're going to like this movie too.
Right, and the times have changed. Our women here are stronger than you would have expected in 20, 30 years ago. 20 or 30 years ago, in this kind of a thriller, it doesn't necessarily turn out well for the women. It doesn't always turn out well.
It didn't in Vertigo, if we can invoke Hitchcock here.
Thank you. Yeah.
And there's elements of that Vertigo to this well.
I think you're so right. Yeah.
Right down to the very end. I would say that what we're dealing with is two very strong women trying to survive in a desperate situation. So you're right in that it is Thelma and Louise in that, although Thelma and Louise was about a woman, two women bonding, and these two women definitely do not bond. If anything, they're at odds throughout the whole film. But yes, that relationship between the women and the men is consistent with Thelma and Louise, very consistent with Vertigo. And it's very interesting to see how this plays out, because this is really a book that was favored by women. The audience that I saw was about 70% women. And that's not to say that guys shouldn't go to this. I think guys are going to get a lot out of this movie too. Goodness knows you and I. But this is definitely a film about women overcoming odds. Overcoming the odds, overcoming their situation, eventually prevailing.
As a cautionary tale for women who go for the superficial in men, right? And there are so many superficial things about this husband.
Well, and I was getting to that point. One fault with this movie and with the elements of the book is the supporting cast, the rich women in this Hudson Valley, sleepy little Hudson Valley town, are so superficial and so stereotypical.
Right.
They're indistinguishable from one another.
His mom.
His mom's like a pivotal
mannequin.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's a pivotal character in this because she is the one that explains why he is the way he is.
K.G. Klein, what do you recommend concerning The Housemaid?
I would recommend the movie. I think the movie does an excellent job of adapting the book. I think it's a very tight script, very well acted. Go see it.
The date movie. I'm one that will provoke discussion. And
Guys, you're not being dragged to Mamma Mia. This is a genuinely good, interesting film, and guys are going to get something out of this as well.
Well, Ken, thank you so much for stopping by on your busy schedule, The Housemaid, and it'll be a perfect one for Wayne and me. But we did enjoy being with the audience at this movie and see how much they enjoyed it. And we thought it was intellectually satisfying and a modern adaptation on something we've seen any number of times in the struggle between males and females. And also, one thing we didn't mention, what do you think about the class theme?
The class theme is another element of this story that we should talk about, and that is the idea that you have the super wealthy and the extremely poor. And we saw that in Highest to Lowest earlier this year with Denzel Washington. We've seen that in a number of movies this year. And The Running Man, of course, with Stephen King. The idea that you have the very, very rich living at the expense of a large population of very, very poor and looking down on the poor. The rich are constantly, in this movie, putting down their helpers, their maids, treating them as though they're subhuman, and just reveling in this wealth, which most of the characters did not acquire through any meaningful way. They either married into wealth or they were given the wealth through inheritance, and now they're just using their position to pat themselves on the back and be happy that they are the masters of the world, where all the maids and butlers and household staff are all treated like dirt.
Ken, and talk about reversing from, say, 40 years ago to now, it's no longer the basement. It's now the attic.
Well, no, if we go back to the turn of the century, it was always the attic. Yeah, if you looked back to the Downton Abbey and the very, very wealthy homes of the early 1900s, it was the third floor. Well, and why did you put them in the third floor? Because you did not have air conditioning.
No, this is not strictly a horror film.
No, not at all.
I think the last 10, 15, 20 minutes.
It's a psychological thriller.
Yeah, but it pretty much opened the door to that territory, the horror film. By it being up there and the door being locked from the outside.
Yeah.
Nice. Really terrifying.
Well, and the author does a really good job, both in the movie and in the book, of giving an excuse why this one character has built this house this way, and why that character, without giving spoilers, why this character acts this way. And it reminds me, do you remember back in the 70s a movie called Sybil?
Yeah.
Okay, the same thing.
But that's the multiple personality?
That's the multiple personality, but a person who had suffered extreme abuse as a child, whose mind fragments as a result of the abuse.
Yeah.
And when you look at the mother in this movie, the housemaid, and you compare it to the mother in Sybil, or even the mother in Carrie, who King had based on the mother in Sybil, trying to get some strong psychological connection there to grounded. It's eerie, the similarities, because what we're really talking about is a person who was abused as a child, who then becomes an abuser as an adult. And this is an interesting element of the housemaid's character, is she really right in the head as well? Or is she a little out there as well? And the book suggests this. The book, because she's the unreliable narrator, you get her point of view. But there's times when you step back and you go, whoa, she's a little out there. But she was convicted of murder. And in the book, it suggests that the entered a room and saw the guy that she was interested in raping another female high school student. But later, you get the impression maybe that wasn't a rape. Maybe that was actual consensual sex. Mm. And she was reacting to seeing the guy that she was attracted to having sex with another student, and she kills him.
Yeah.
So you don't really know because, again, she's unreliable. We're getting her point of view, not the factual point of view. They can't really produce that in the movie, though. They have to show the movie, because it's a film, more objectively. So you don't get that element of, is she seeing or remembering what she thinks she was seeing?
You brought in Hitchcock.
Oh, yeah.
Who is, for me, a thriller.
Yes.
And so, therefore, as a thriller magician, I think you were right to bring him in. But then I might want to ask you, for instance, how does this compare with Psycho?
Well, Psycho is another film, like most Hitchcock's films, that is very misogynist. Hitchcock was never really treated his female characters very well, with the possible exception of North by Northwest. They all end up suffering fairly bad fates. Psycho, yes, in as much as you're having a crazy male character who's preying on women.
Yeah.
And that is a very good comparison. But I like the comparison with Vertigo better, because Vertigo, you've got the female character who's a very strong character, a fairly grounded character, and you've got this very likable character in Jimmy Stewart. It all goes very haywire at the end, and you do not want to be, in the end, one of Hitchcock's girls. Hitchcock had directed The Housemaid. I don't think either of the women would have survived.
And certainly Amanda Seyfried wouldn't have.
I don't think either one of them would, and the guy would have.
As we look at modern adaptations, and certainly we're very favorable to The Housemaid,
mm-hmm.
How does this compare with Get Out?
Well, Get Out's a great, great film. Get Out is a, it's a psychological thriller, but I would put it more to the horror side.
Okay.
There is moments of Get Out where they really concentrate on frightening the audience.
Yes.
And very, very well. And of course, Get Out had one of my favorite actresses in it as well, our actress from Regretting You and the Megan movies. So I do like Get Out. I like Get Out as
a horror
film.
I thought there
film.
Was a strong female side of that.
There was. Strong female side, although I think a little bit more of the horror element. Get Out is more like The Shining without Shelley Duvall, where you have a woman that
great.
Can really
That's
honestly
great.
Stand up for herself, as opposed to King's woman in The Shining, who was such whimpering, easy to overcome until everything starts going badly for Nicholson.
Yeah, you know, I like that. What I like especially about your bringing in that The Shining is that possible that our protagonist is a pretty good guy. He just can't write. And then all of a sudden, as things pan out, it doesn't pan out well for him.
No.
And I'm thinking of the similarity to our current movie.
Johnny is as much a victim in The Shining as everybody else is. He is a victim of the of the hotel and the things the hotel does to his mind. But at the end of the day, I will never be one who says that Shelley Duvall defeated him. She didn't defeat him. He defeated himself.
Oh,
he became his own worst enemy. It wasn't Shelley Duvall. She barely got out with her life. But in this movie, what we are really seeing, what I really enjoyed, and again, we're giving away spoilers, what I enjoyed was the way that the writer teaches us how he came to be the person he is. Because he's got a really good side, and I think raised differently, that good side would have won, would have prevailed.
The guy was never good. He just is a good actor.
I disagree. I think the mother is responsible, and possibly the father, for everything bad about this guy. I think he was tortured. I think the idea of being locked in a room from the outside and being forced to do terrible things to yourself and as punishment was something that was inflicted on him as a child. And now that he's an adult, he's perpetuating what happened to him as a child. And that's the takeaway I get from this movie and this book, is that the author is really teaching us the terrible things you do to children. Those children will grow up and potentially do those same terrible things as an adult because they don't know any other way. That's how they were raised.
You've got to admit that this, in depicting the mother, has taken Jamie Lee Curtis and stretched her out and just made her more horrifying than you could ever think. It is a great physical representation.
Oh, yeah. The mother, you know, when she's in the room, everything just gets so cold. You know, you'd hate to have been raised by a woman like that.
Yeah.
And you just, that's why I said earlier, you just know he was tortured as a child, and now he's inflicting those same tortures, which he doesn't think is a torture. He thinks it's a way of disciplining and controlling. And this is why you notice he specifically picks women who are in desperate situations, poor, unable to support themselves, easily controlled. And this is what he looks for. Just as his mother controlled him as a child, he looks for somebody who is childlike in their ability to assert themselves and their ability to assert control. And when Millie starts taking control, when he's the one locked in the room, he freaks out because he's never been in that situation. He was never, as a child, in control.
Sure.
And this isn't how the world is supposed to work. He has no reference for this.
Do you think, like Jack Nicholson's ex, the pliers might become iconic?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if the pliers.
He
drops the pliers pretty quickly on, but, and Jack has that axe right up until after he's dead.
But I still had a lot of squirms in my audience.
Oh, gosh,
when he starts working that.
Oh, gosh. Well, I was squirming when she has to take that piece of broken crockery and slash her chest
open
with it.
Oh, yeah, good one, right.
Oh, yeah. And I was even cringing when Sayfield was having to pull 100 hairs out of her head by the follicles.
Yeah.
You know, and that's nothing but torture. That's all it is. It's nothing but torture.
Sonnenschein, who is the adapter here, the screenplay writer, but also perhaps the author originally, in talking about the follicles at the end of the hair. And had the one.
Yeah.
He found one.
He counted all those, 100 himself, which is pretty loopy. and found one that didn't have a follicle. Yeah, that's how out there he is.
Yeah.
But my big takeaway, John, from this movie is the sad thing, the really saddest thing of this, is that the torture that we're seeing inflicted cannot be confined to a movie. There's a reality behind this.
Oh, there is. I mean, we're living through the disparity between the rich and the poor.
Yeah.
Is not, and the pressure being put on the poor now.
And children being tortured in this way by very undeserving parents, and then learning that and passing that on to their spouses.
And Ken, think about what a young person such as our Sydney Sweeney character,
yeah,
what she might face on her own in trying to pay for her affordable care.
Oh, yeah.
Unless she gets...
We are a very vulnerable society because we do not have a social safety net for our marginally employed, our people coming fresh out of prison. They just don't have... If they were living in Europe, if they were living in one of the European nations, there would be a social safety net to protect those people so they don't become victims or they don't become predators. Because they're going to go one way or the other. They're either going to become victims of somebody more powerful than them, or they're going to become thieves and murderers and rapists and anything that they can do to put their mark on society in revenge for the way they've been treated. But you don't have that in Europe. You do not have that in Europe because a good example, I always default to my home nation, Norway, which I think is so the best nation in the world when it comes to a social net.
Yeah.
Norway, my Norwegian friends like to say, it is a nation where nobody can afford a Lamborghini, but everybody can afford a brand new Audi. It's an entire nation of middle class and some upper middle class, but there's nobody in the poor and there's very, very few in the rich.
Yeah.
And that's what they found is that you as a person are a much, much happier person if you're living in an upper-middle-class lifestyle with everybody else living in an upper-middle-class lifestyle, and you don't have to deal with the people on the street corner panhandling, and you don't have to deal with the person that has $1 billion who has 15 maids that they're treating badly. Yep. It's much, much easier if everybody is of a similar social status. You all have enough to keep you happy without having to have a $20 million home.
Yeah, well, then... I'm sure that we're happy that Senator Joseph McCarthy is no longer in power because he'd have put you in jail.
For saying that. Well, you know, and there is a large portion of the population that support a Bernie Sanders, of course, is one of us that believes that we need to become a nation that socially supports, a government supports all so that nobody is left in the kind of situation we see this character Millie in, and nobody is able to be the character that Amanda Seyfried is that's able to prey on, or her husband, able to prey on the poor.
All right, K.G. Klein, the movie is The Housemaid. It's out there. It's enjoyable. It's a great date night. What do you recommend to our audience?
It's a great adaptation of the book. As I've been saying, I like the movies that are based on New York Times bestsellers because I think they're right off the gate. They're starting out with a strong script. I loved it. Go see it. If you've read the book, go see it. If you liked Where the Crawdads Sing, go see it. Just go see it.